Welcome to Command Control Power, a weekly podcast hosted by three certified members of the Apple Consultants Network, drawing from nearly half a century of combined experience. We talk shop, interview vendors and colleagues, and share what we've learned while operating our technology consulting practices. This is Joe Sapinari of CIMAC, and my two co-hosts are Jerry Zygmunt of MacWorks and Sam Valencia of the HCS Technology Group. Listen live and join us in the chat at commandcontrolpower.com on the first Tuesday of every month. We also offer a weekly email newsletter, which includes show notes for each episode. Learn more at commandcontrolpower.com. And thanks for listening. This episode of Command Control Power is brought to you commercial-free and is made possible by our Patreon sponsors. You can help bring more commercial-free episodes by going to patreon.com/cmdctrlpwr and supporting the show with a monthly pledge. Thank you for your support of Command Control Power. Very pleased this week to be joined by a brand new guest, Lucas Acosta, CEO of Fuji, based in Atlanta, Georgia. Lucas, welcome to Command Control Power.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Lucas, we met you first, I think, at ACES a few years ago. I noticed one of the things that you talked about and that you do is video production. So in addition to being a member of the ACN and also on the ACN Advisory Council, you also incorporate video into, you know, some aspects of your business and as a service for clients. How are things down there in Atlanta today?
Fantastic. You know, spring is here and weather's great.
So Lucas, take us from the beginning. If I hopped into an elevator and I looked like a prospective client, give us a little elevator pitch on Fuji, please.
Sure. I'll give you the pitch as it stands now in 2018, because it has changed quite a bit over the years as we've experimented. But we are an outsourced IT shop for businesses using Apple products.
You have a break-fix model. You also have managed services that you can provide for clients.
Right. So the majority of our revenue is managed services. However, we still accept break-fix customers and MDM projects as well. But we are pretty directly focused at small business. Over the years, we've just found that's a really fantastic niche where we can excel. It's the work we really enjoy. You know, we've experimented with K-12 schools, with enterprise, and we just keep coming back to small business as being consistent and fun revenue in terms of growing a business. That's where we are now.
And one of the hallmarks of Fuji is video integration. For any of our listeners who've been thinking about doing something like that to augment their business, can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I always smile when someone asks us about video. One, because we do love doing it. It's completely a side hobby that has grown into a revenue stream. As we all know, as consultants, clients are asking us to build websites or hang picture frames for them, all sorts of extra jobs. But one thing that we've just kind of built up over the years is video. So we're mostly an Apple IT company, and we also do video production for businesses. It really started because we were doing video for ourselves, doing our consistent video campaigns to our customers, which we can talk more about that in a second. Customers started asking us, like, hey, who did you use as your video production company? We always answered, like, well, we just did it ourselves. And they said, well, how much do you charge? So we just had to figure out a price. Turns out it's similar day rates to IT work. And we've got just a fantastic team. Justin McGow, specifically on my team, is just a wizard with the technical audio lighting. It's a creative outlet for him. And I enjoy producing them and just being part of that writing process. You know, it works for us. And whereas we don't necessarily design websites or other little kind of offshoots of revenue, but video is something that we really enjoy doing.
I would imagine that would open up a whole world of opportunities and potential new business just with the video as jumping off point and then, you know, worrying about their Macs later.
That's true. And you could easily make the argument that we should focus more on video because it is so attractive to do as a business these days just to put on your homepage. And so I've intentionally just played that conservatively. We'll take care of the clients if they ask for it, but it's not on our website, for example, you know, like video services. However, I've been saying that for about 5-6 years now. So I think it's about time to go ahead and just put it on our website and offer that to the public.
What I'm curious about is how does that mesh with the Apple Consulting? Because I've found in my line of work with, you know, the Apple Consulting is obviously primary, but over the years, I've dabbled in a few other things like, you know, say, helping clients with websites. It's not something we do typically anymore, but we have done over the years. And what can happen is it can be really difficult to find the chunks of time that I find, you know, needed for that type of work. Whereas it's a lot easier to, you know, do 2 hours here, 1 hour there for Apple consulting. If I need to really sit down and focus on somebody's website for an extended period of time, it can just be hard to schedule. So I just wonder if you start welcoming new work specifically around video, how does this mesh well today and how do you see that changing potentially in the future? Do you have enough people in place to make that work?
How we see it, and the reason we've continued to offer this, it's not too different from a time allocation from like an MDM project. There's a small law firm that's asking to prop up Jamf Now or Meraki Systems Manager. That's a good 2 days worth of work, maybe 4 days worth of work. We're still able to charge a decent rate that's comparable to our IT rate. And so we actually just consider it like that, right? Like revenue is revenue. And so we're able to prioritize it the same way as any other MDM project,
sure,
for example.
Certainly the costs of video have been driven way down. If you were thinking of doing this yourself, if you're listening to the show, what do you think is minimally what would someone need to get started?
I would also encourage just anyone listening to just take a stab at it in terms of making one yourself for your own customers. You wouldn't believe how much video brings that transparency to your consulting business. And we've been told time and time and again that our clients love the fact that we have videos where they can get to know us. We have this ongoing relationship with our customers over video. When WWDC announcements come out or new products are released for the holidays, we do a video recap. You really can get started with an iPhone. You basically go down the rabbit hole to your heart's content in terms of audio. Even an inexpensive USB external mic will really help that audio quality significantly. I would say it's one of those things, like if you want to start running or exercising, like don't worry about what's the best shoe to buy. Just go buy some running shoes because that's not the point, right? Like just get out there and run and give it a shot. I think you'll be surprised with what your customers say, like, oh man, that was so awesome. Thank you for that 8 minute recap or whatever on Apple's announcements.
What is your primary mode for distribution on that? Do you send out an email list or do you push it out through Facebook? I mean, how do you reach most of your viewers?
We've tried a few different video services over the years, but I guess first and foremost, we do include it on an email campaign. So our clients and our audience, whoever signed up on our website for the newsletter, they get the email notification about each video that we release. We're hosting those videos on YouTube. We've done Wistia in the past. We did Vimeo for the longest time just because I really liked Vimeo's just interface. It was cleaner. There's no ads. And now we just kind of put the flag down and post it on YouTube because that's where a lot of that viral traffic is. Most of our video views were in like the 500 range before YouTube, because those are just the numbers of our clients plus their friends that they would forward it on to. Since we went to YouTube, we've got some videos with 15,000 views, 20,000 views, 25,000 views, and people commenting saying like, please give us more, you know, like please talk about this particular app more, you know. So it is pretty cool to get it out on YouTube and get some of that feedback.
Yeah, the discoverability on YouTube is the factor. The bar is much higher, so why not?
Exactly. Yeah. And one thing to kind of point out, there's a case to do video as your own business, right? To keep in touch with your clients. And that's why we started. I knew that if I wanted to grow, I wasn't going to be able to be the Lucas Mac buddy in front of all of my clients. There would be other people visiting my clients. And so I wanted a way to just kind of keep that personal relationship with all of my clients. So I'd encourage anyone to start it for that reason. And then what's resulted out of that is our clients wanting to buy video services from us. So it's been an internal marketing effort that's turned into, you know, this revenue stream.
Right. Not to mention YouTube as the platform, and that opens up, you know, another possible revenue stream if you wanted to work that angle to probably can't get too far with 10,000 views. Another order of magnitude beyond that, and you're probably talking about monetization and things. So if you choose to go down that route, that's even another possible angle. If you find the right audience, that can really take off, as you've already seen. So
yeah, more of the commenters, more of that viral traffic is from that global YouTube population. So it is tempting to go down that path. We've gotten a total of $100 from YouTube.
Nice. Nice.
Year to date. For now, it is Apple at Work is kind of the niche, because there's a lot of conversations about Apple products for education and different industries, but not really just Apple products at work at the office. So that's kind of the angle we're taking with the YouTube show.
as colleagues of ours maybe consider going out there and beginning to shoot some of their own videos, maybe even with their iPhone. As you mentioned, you know, you can really just get started with the iPhone, especially the iPhone 10. But I mean, certainly, I think everything from the probably the you know 6S Plus and up, you know, the 7, the 8, they all have very, very good cameras, especially in decent lighting conditions. But one thing I'm wondering is, you mentioned, you know, you plug in an external mic. Do you have any kind of recommendation for just how to take an iPhone and shoot, you know, pretty easily, maybe with the built-in software, or maybe if you have a software recommendation, but what do you do for audio? Because I find that the biggest variation out there is audio quality. You know, some of them are compressed and normalized and like they sound, you know, pretty consistently good. Other times, you know, you have really quiet videos and then really loud videos and poorly mic'd or well mic'd videos. And I wonder, I mean, in your experience, if you were just diving in with an iPhone, does the built-in mic work okay in certain circumstances? Or do you have a recommendation on what mic or what type of mic somebody might connect, you know, to an iPhone to just enhance that audio aspect a little bit?
Yeah, that's a great question. I couldn't agree more. If you're deciding where to invest, I would go audio first, because you can get away with an iPhone if you are shooting like near a window with sunlight coming in. That video looks so good. It's crisp. And so I would roll with that, you know, as long as you can. In terms of audio, I will make my disclaimer here that I'm not the resident gearhead at Fuji. Justin has done all the research. You'd be surprised how using an iPhone in a shirt pocket or an iPhone on like a boom stand, if you have someone holding it or if you do have a mic stand to hold it like above you, does a decent job if you're just trying to get by with zero cost to start with.
Right. So just to be clear, you would have a second iPhone specifically for audio recording, and then you just in post-production, you sort of merge those, you know, the audio piece with the video.
Exactly. And you can do that in iMovie even, you know, just drop that audio track right into iMovie. And on the iPhone, you're literally recording using the Voice Memos app. When we were really scrappy, we did that a couple of times. And even one time when we didn't have a mic, it was kind of a last minute shoot. We recorded that way as well. I would recommend use the same mic for the entire video. So if you're having to do multiple takes or multiple shots over a week, use the same audio source that you know started with. So shortly thereafter, we go into the Pro Audio pretty quickly, and what we use is a Rode shotgun mic with a Zoom audio recording device. So we have this mic hanging on a boom stand that records directly onto this little device with an SD card on it. You just pop that SD card into your Mac, just drop it into iMovie. I will say shotgun mics are more sensitive. So if you don't have control over your environment audibly, shotgun mics do pick up a lot. We just like shotgun mics because it's more natural. There's no microphone in the shot. But lav mics, like lavalier mics, are actually a lot easier to deal with. They do a better job of silencing just like ambient noise. But whether it's a lav mic or a shotgun mic, recording into a Zoom is how we get that better quality. And you can throw that audio right on top of your iPhone video.
Nice.
Yeah, that's Joe's hardware when we go on the road, right, Joe? You own a Zoom product?
For the Aces annual live broadcast, we have the Zoom. I think it's the HR6. It's got six, you know, it's got, four built-in XLR inputs, and then it's got like the, whatever you call the little adapter on the top, which you can add another two XLR inputs there.
If you're listening and you're wondering, like, why are they talking about video for the first 20 minutes of the show? It's all about engagement. And I think if you look at your website, Lucas, one of the tabs across the top, and we can go to the Fuji show and we can sort of get to know you, even though you may be our prospective vendor for providing Macintosh services for our company. And immediately there's that connection that you make with your client when you have videos there. And I know on my website, I don't have videos and I don't think Joe does. So I think that's really, really important. And here we are in 2018. And if you haven't really thought about this, it's probably about time you did, because it certainly might give you, especially in a competitive market, any advantage that you can have, which really, again, the startup cost is almost nothing to engage your clients. So I think this is just a fantastic way for you to set yourself apart.
Right. I mean, Jerry, you hit the nail on the head. One thing that video does not do is generate leads. we used to get, or we get a lot of questions about that. We're not doing YouTube to have our phones ring off the hook, because they don't, you know, coming from YouTube. So this is not a lead generation strategy, but I think what it does do is exactly what you said, is when someone is comparing opportunities, comparing vendors, they do say like, wow, we just loved your website. You know, that dovetails into the videos as well. Again, even if it's just a basic video, it just an about us video, or just post one about the most recent Apple announcements. It's not evergreen, but it'll last you like 6 months. You know, just do that quick video, put it up there.
And if you did one on the Mac Mini, it could last you for years.
That's right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Target the Mac Pro.
Right. Right. We've just continued to get great feedback from that. I started very simple. My first video is not online anymore, but I did show it at the ACES conference 2 years ago. I shot it with my iPhone on my couch at home and got awesome feedback. It was way too long of a video, but clients still loved it. And it was shortly thereafter when Justin joined, and he kind of brought his photography expertise to really take it up a notch. But, you know, we still got great feedback with the simple videos.
So, Lucas, do you, I think you said you have some content on YouTube. Do you do a regular feature on YouTube as well?
We try to. There's only a handful of us here at Fuji. And so in the last few months, we haven't been able to be as consistent as we'd like to be. But yes, on YouTube, it's youtube.com/FujiVideo, and that's where we do post regularly.
Nice. We record audio for the podcast. We try our best to get one take, more or less. I imagine that's even more important with video, because you've got the technical requirements of file sizes that are just harder to work with, not to mention the whole concept of lighting, and something you touched on earlier about consistency of like audio quality. The more you redo takes and lighting is shifting and you have continuity issues, can you speak a little bit about that aspect of the production process?
Absolutely. If you don't have someone to do the editing like on your team, or if you don't have that time to do editing yourself, I would highly, highly recommend to just do it in one take. It's almost a requirement. Even if you have to do it 10 times, start with a short video, like a 3-4 minute video, and do it in one take, because you're absolutely right. Editing video just takes so much longer than you'd expect. That's the reason why our most recent YouTube videos are more of this show format, where it's pretty raw and it's all one take, because we're busy. And so now we plop down at our conference room table and we do like a 15 minute episode, a 10 minute episode on just Apple news and tips about email apps or whatever. And then we have to go take care of clients. We're even trying to simplify as much as we can. There is value going what we call the scripted way, where it's a much more succinct message, to get it down to like a 3 or 4 minute video. That does take longer to plan for, because you really do want to script it. And it takes longer to edit as well, because you're usually having to piece together multiple takes. It kind of depends just what kind of video you're going for. But I love just doing it in one take and going simple, you know, to get it off the ground.
That's a good tip. And I'm sure Jerry can relate from the perspective of the audio editing. You know, that's hard enough as it is and time consuming, at least probably, you know, whatever length of time you record, you've got to sit down for, you know, probably another like double that essentially. So I can imagine with video, you know, it's got to be like, I don't know what multiple, but, you know, if you record 60 minutes worth of content, you know, what is that like 3 or 4X? Probably takes you several hours basically to edit that, I would imagine.
Yeah, it really does. To just spare you that learning lesson, just go with a one take until you're ready to dabble. And then you might dabble with a topic like, hey, in this video, we want to show you about the new iCloud storage options. And you might try to make that like a little 2 minute scripted video. But on your first video, I would try to just keep it pretty transparent as an announcement video or kind of a news recap. One piece of advice, just if you're new to this, that helped me kind of be normal Lucas in front of the lens, because lenses aren't as fun to talk to as humans are. And you kind of feel weird talking to a lens and getting excited in front of this sterile lens.
Some of us don't like talking to humans that much either. So that's another layer of this.
What I channel is to pretend like I'm talking to a client. Like I showed up, I'm talking to one of my longest time clients of 5 years. They just asked me, like, I heard Apple had an announcement, you know, event recently. You know, what did they announce? And so I just try to channel that energy, because that's what your clients love, right? That's why they keep calling you back to their office, is because they actually like you. Right. So just channel that persona, if you will, just when you're talking to your clients. And that'll usually help talking in front of this lens that isn't as empathetic as a human being is.
Sure. To pivot a little bit, just to talk more generally about, you know, your Apple consulting side of things, you're the CEO of Fuji, and we should spell Fuji. It's F-O-O-J-E-E. I was going to joke and say, you guys make the scan snap, right? Is that you?
Yeah, we do that too.
That's Fujitsu, I think.
We do it all. Yeah. And bicycles.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you're all over the map. As CEO of Fuji, what is your day-to-day like on that side of things?
Now, that's a great question, because it's actually changed every year. I think it's slightly different than the year before, and that depends on what contracts are on the table or how big or small our team is. Because a few years ago, we did staff up a little bit for some enterprise contracts, and those expired since. Right now in 2018, I'm about 50 to 60% engineer, right there blocking and tackling with printer issues and High Sierra updates that brick people's Macs. You know, my briefcase is full with all of my tools right now.
An interesting balance. I think a lot of people, as time goes on, as you get into the CEO role, Sam and I have talked about this a little bit, where you get outside of the day-to-day more so, and you stop being as technical and as much of an engineer. But you said you're at least 50% engineer still these days?
Yeah, exactly. And then 20 to 30% business development, so just managing incoming leads, and then the rest somewhere trying to fit in running the rest of the business. I think everyone listening has their own story and has their own strengths to how they can help their company. What I know my strengths are not is bookkeeping. Dispatch is kind of the operational stuff. So we do have a full-time office manager that's able to kind of keep that day-to-day going. And my strengths can be used best right now as an engineer in sales, and then the occasional video that we make. A few years ago, I was more of that CEO role, where I was removed from the ticketing queue completely, because that's what the team required of me. I had a bigger payroll then as well. So I had to spend more time developing business and managing those people and doing the one-on-ones with the team and things like that, which I love too. We have to roll with the punches in the different seasons as business owners.
It's an interesting thing, Lucas. We talk a lot about growing our business, but and it's interesting, and it's actually comforting to hear you say, yeah, we were doing some bigger contracts and those expired and we scaled back a little bit. It doesn't mean that the business has somehow lost its traction. It's just a natural ebb and flow of the workplace economy. It's validating to hear you feeling very comfortable with sharing that information with our listeners, because everybody talks about, well, you know, I hired this guy and I hired this guy and now, you know, we're making this amount of money and we're just growing, growing, growing. It's not a perfect world out there, and it doesn't always go like that. And there's no reason why, if you are listening, that you feel like it's some sort of a major setback. You know, contracts come and go. It sounds like you've really got a good focus or perspective on the nature of the business. And speaking of the business, where do you see that going? I mean, you know, obviously sure. Apple's made a lot of changes with the consultants network, and you're listed on the locator as having 5 Apple consultants on site. If you can just speak to that a little bit, the value that you think the Apple consultants network brings to your business.
I want to touch on what you mentioned earlier about these ebbs and flows. I think that's something so real that every business owner deals with. And yeah, when we walk into an Apple meeting or we meet with other people to tell our story, it's all about growing. It was all about headcount, and headcount equaled success. Without the ebbs and flows and those contracts that expired, we wouldn't be in the place where we are now, where we've looked up and said, you know what, this small business revenue, these small business clients, the impact we're having with these small businesses, like, it's just so much more gratifying. It's so much more stable for at least our skill set, right? I'm sure there's consultants in the audience that have found their niche with Enterprise or with Jamf Pro. you know, we've done Jamf Pro. I'm certified Jamf myself. I'm a CCA. As it's turned out, over the past 7 years, we've been adding more and more managed service agreements. And we just look up and realize, oh, these clients love us. The customer satisfaction scores that we get from our ticketing system, we use Autotask out of necessity, not because we love it. We're just getting great feedback from small business. And so I think we're in the healthiest place we've ever been in as a company. Our customers are just continuing to give us great feedback. And I think we're positioned for more stable growth and a more stable forecast, you know, than we've ever been. Because I used to allocate a lot of time trying to talk to schools, trying to talk to larger enterprises, taking those meetings, taking them out to lunch, preparing keynote presentations. That requires a lot of time. So I'm not saying it's for everyone or like what we're doing is for everyone. You know, as a result of our journey is, find what's right for you, right? What gives you energy?
That's a great point. I think that you touched on not only about what you find fulfilling, you know, what clients, what feedback they give you and what they're gaining from your consulting, how much value they're getting from it. You know, the more you can, you know, help them leverage technology, say, to improve their business or be more efficient and effective and just feel good. That's really beneficial all around. But it's also about the roles that you play. And you touched on that earlier too. If your business is such that, you know, you really need to be out there selling and managing the business, and you don't get to do what you might enjoy if you enjoy consulting and the engineering part of things, what good is that? I mean, you could grow to a larger size and be increasing your revenue. Suddenly you created a job for yourself that you actually don't really even want. Would you take that job if somebody offered it to you? Maybe not. It's important to transform the role that you create for yourself to fit what you want to do to make it sustainable for you. And maybe that involves, you know, one of those levers you can turn is to actually just maybe scale back the operation and change the clients you go after to be better suited to, maybe they're easier to manage, you know, maybe the sales cycle is different, whatever the case may be, where you don't have to do as much business development and management. So that's a really good lesson for people to learn. How, Lucas, just for the context, how long have you been doing this?
We started in 2008 in October, which happened to be when the Lehman Brothers collapsed.
Oh, yeah.
And I would like I just left Apple and I was thinking about that recently that, man, none of my friends or anyone said, like, asked me to reconsider right. my timing. So and I think what, Jerry, you started in 2007. Is that right?
That's right.
We could only go up from there. And so we're at 9 years technically right now in business.
Nice. Well done. Well, I think that's a really important thing that Jerry called attention to, just the ebbs and flows. And it's good to hear that, you know, as you've gone through that, you know, you've never lost sight of what's important to you. For further context, at the peak, I guess, did you have more engineers than you have now? Or how has the business sort of changed over those years?
We were just in a high growth mode at the time. And at our peak, we had about 6 engineers. That's also the time where we opened up Fuji Nashville, which is still thriving. Shout out to Jimmy. Fuji Nashville has just been a match made in heaven. That's really gone well, I think, for everyone. And I was under the impression in the earlier years that I needed to be big in order for clients to hire us. And so that really fueled a lot of my hiring decisions and when to hire, is I wanted to continue to invest in a bigger team. And it did work, right? We got some K-12 contracts, like doing large deployments of 2,000 Macs using Jamf Pro. I had a full-time salesperson on staff. I even had a full-time marketing person just because it was an itch that I wanted to scratch for a short period. What I realized after the change of the last couple of years, it was kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. I needed a full-time salesperson to be able to sell, to cover our high expenses from having a big team.
To justify the salary of the full-time salesperson. So it's this like self-perpetuating
yes.
spiral. Yeah.
And that's a worthwhile consideration. A lot of times we think, you know, if we grow, it's just going to end up returning more money in our pocket. Those are real Ouija board things that you have to calculate. Well, you know, if we do this and we add on to our building and we hire more staff, is it going to give us the return, or are we just going to simply have more overhead and just employ more people? And to what end? It's always a delicate balance with a small business.
And what we were doing throughout that period of experimenting with larger customers and going up market, we never stopped selling just our managed service plan. Maybe it's more akin to my personality, like it's hard for me to focus on one idea at a time. And so we were just slowly just adding these small business service agreements throughout the year and years. And that ended up just growing eventually to be sustainable on its own. Now we're at a point where we didn't need to rehire after those expired contracts or look for new people. Because like, you know what? With the small business revenue, I'm actually okay with staying the size we are now. The high majority, over 90% of our clients have retained us since they started going back about 7-8 years ago. You know, every business is different, but you kind of have to just have that time to talk with peers, with mentors to help illustrate, you know, or paint a picture of what actually happened in the last year or the last 3 to 4 years looking at those trends.
Yeah. And to reflect back on your own business and how things are going, because, you know, oftentimes we go into these things with, I think, preconceived notions of, like you were saying earlier, you know, what does success look like? Where should I be aiming in order to achieve the vision of success that maybe came from other people? Probably the first half of my business, you know, the first 5 to 7 years, thinking I want to go after larger businesses, but it was just me. So there's certain logistical problems with that. Thinking that was the aim for my future success. And, it, you know, to a large extent, obviously, small businesses are definitely still important to us. But at some point, I realized that there's really nothing wrong with residential. I was always successful in the residential market. I happened to be in a market where high-end residential is, you know, almost like equally competitive with small business. They pay the same rates. What's the difference? And so it worked for me. And it took me a while to actually realize that that's a valid market, and that it was working for me, and that there's no reason not to embrace that particular market. It was coming from outside thinking, oh, I should be going after those larger businesses, or just focusing on small business and excluding residential. And, you know, over the long term, I will exclude residential, of course, that's what everyone does, but, you know, and focus everything on small business. But then I asked myself, like, why am I assuming that's the way that it should go? Of course, there are lots of drawbacks to working with residential clients sometimes, namely those printer issues that you mentioned earlier, and lots of other things like that. There's nothing fundamentally wrong. And so if it works for an individual, if it works for a certain business, it's perfectly valid to go after that. So I definitely would encourage listeners to check in with themselves as they move along and think, you know, what are my assumptions here? Where am I aiming? And why? Call those things into question sometimes.
Right. And what we do is we track our on-site and remote revenue, like just in QuickBooks. We also have business on-site and residential on-site. We track business and residential revenue so that we can see that trend. And we started 100% doing residential support because that's who would pay us. But that's where we started. And what we've seen now is last year, our residential revenue was 2%. But we're still not shutting that off. We still enjoy it. We still find executives and vice presidents that want at-home assistance. And then that can serve as a referral source to commercial revenue. So yeah, everyone's story is different. And even Nashville tends to get more high-end residential as well, just given the entertainment industry in Nashville. So we do let the customers lead that, you know, follow the demand of what's right for you.
So I guess as we wind down the conversation, Lucas, do you see any sort of long-term trends that, you know, you're focused on over the next few years in either reshaping your business or the greater technology trends in general, or specifically in the world of Apple that you want to bring to mind for our listeners?
The managed services type of offering has just worked well, at least here in Atlanta for us and Nashville. Businesses continue to switch to Mac. We still are talking with the Apple stores here in our local markets, and I don't think that's going to be slowing down. I do wonder what Fuji will look like in 20 years. You know, is this going to be iOS support? Are we going to be like live streaming our video support sessions? I don't even know what that's going to look like doing AR tech support. For now, one thing that we're constantly focused on is, are our customers happy? And are we doing the best that we can do? Not really concerned with what other people are doing. In a perfect world, we kind of draw this map of what would we want to do with our customers if we could do anything. That might be AR, augmented reality tech support someday. We'll just kind of have to see what's possible. And kind of goes back to a question that Jerry had that I wasn't able to answer about just how I'm involved with the Apple Consultants Network and why I'm still part of the Apple Consultants Network. And the main reason I'm part of the ACN, aside from leads, that's always been a good reason to be part of the ACN. And I know that varies per geo. But with or without the leads, because we've even gone through our own seasons of that, I want to be aligned with Apple. By being part of the Apple Consultants Network, I have access to the Apple Advance Camps and the roadshows and these mobile certifications. That's what I've hitched my wagon to, is Apple. And for a nominal fee per year, I want to be as close to knowing Apple's roadmap as possible. And I like to play it conservatively when I'm setting up solutions for my clients. I try not to go too custom. I really try to stay with Apple best practices, because we all know that an iOS later or a macOS later, things can be broken. That's really why I stay part of the ACN compared to, I think, other industries like lawyers and medical offices who have to pay lots of association fees every year to be involved or for licensing. I consider this a relatively small cost. It's absolutely worth it just to have that relationship with Apple.
Yeah, I would completely agree. I get a lot of value just out of, you know, being aligned with Apple officially in that capacity, you know, not only for the leads, and you do sometimes benefit from those, but as you said, just the ability to kind of keep apprised of industry best practices, where Apple's headed, to be involved with the community of ACNs. You know, you and I are both privy to a little bit of behind the scenes at the ACN, but I think it's fair to say that they are working very hard on that program and transforming it all for the better, as far as I can say. And so it's a great time to be an ACN. Yeah, I look forward to, you know, seeing the next 10 years of Apple. I mean, it's pretty hard to imagine, but it's great to be here on the front lines of it. Yeah, it's a good place to be.
I've been an ACN for 7 years now. The plans are big and really encouraging to see that.
Definitely. Thank you very much, Lucas, for joining us. Where can people find you out there on the internet?
Sure. YouTube.com/FujiVideo if you want to see our news or silly videos that we like to have fun with. On Twitter, Lucas Aaron, because my last name was taken, so I just put in my middle name. And you spell Fuji FOOJEE.
Very cool. And do you want to give the listeners a quick backstory of the name in case they didn't figure it out as we're talking?
Yeah. So I'm going to give them an extra backstory that not too many people know, because they've listened to the end here. We started our company with a different name, On-Site Technical Consulting. It was just extremely literal. And what we found out was when we actually got customers and they started to pay us by writing our names on their check, they couldn't remember our name.
That's a bad sign.
Yeah, it's a really bad sign. And our advisor said, definitively, you guys need to change this name. After a lot of brainstorming, it was just my favorite Apple. We changed the spelling so we could have a short domain name. So Fuji it is.
There you go. Very nice. Well, thank you again, Lucas Acosta, CEO of Fuji, based in Atlanta, Georgia. Thanks for joining us on Command Control Power.
Thanks again, guys.